Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. Who said a week is a lifetime in politics? I think it was an embattled former prime minister of England. But anyway, what a week to illustrate that in terms of the Obama administration. Republicans surely aren't hurting for talking points. And joining us now to pick up the pieces of this last week in the Obama administration for examination is Ken Rudin, NPR's political junkie. Welcome back, Ken. Hi, Ken. Okay. We have lost Ken Rudin. We'll get him back. So in the meantime, we'll be talking about the Obama administration and what they've been going through this past week. You have any comments, questions for Ken, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. Ken Rudin, are you there?
I am there. I am here.
Scared me there for a second.
The Justice Department was checking into my phone calls to see if I, how the government...
Yeah, if anyone hears any strange clicking on the line, let us know.
And if they hear strange clicking, then they know I'm on your show.
All right, did you hear my intro?
I did not.
All right, so I said something like, who said a week is a lifetime in politics, blah, 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 and what a week to illustrate that, and joining us now is Ken Rudin.
Oh, wow, I'm going to listen into this. This sounds like a good show. It's unbelievable. And, we were talking about not that long ago when President Obama was reelected, all these things he wants to do. And it seems like, we could always talk about the curse of the second term president. But we remember when George Bush was reelected in 2004, he has political capital and he intends to take advantage of it. And then came Katrina, and then came, the financial scandal and everything else, and of course, Iraq and everything, and the second term went downward. Now, I'm not saying this is the end of a second Obama term, but again, it shows the perils of a presidency where everything just seems to be conspiring against you.
Yeah, it's been in all in 1 week. Let's start with the IRS issue. President Obama yesterday basically fired the top official. I know they say they retired or resigned, whatever, over the targeting.
Totally absent resignation, right?
Right. Targeting of conservative groups for special scrutiny. What kind of ramifications could this have? They're saying it was very low-level people, but what a great talking point.
Well, the reason it's a great talking point is because everybody can relate to how much they hate the IRS. It's one thing to talk about Benghazi and they say, well, that's partisanship, and that's what President Obama has been saying from the beginning, that if they're out to get me, they're out to get Hillary Clinton, it's all about partisanship. But the IRS, everybody can take umbrage to. And now, the question you say is what, the famous Watergate question, what did the president know and when did he know it?
Right.
If the administration was part of this, if they knew about this, and so far there's no proof that anybody in the administration knows about this. But if they did, then then it sounds Nixon-esque. It sounds Watergate-ish. But for now, it looks like it seems like they could be very low-level officials of the IRS in Cincinnati or wherever. But it's just bad, both presidents, presidents of both parties have a history of using the IRS to further their political gains, and it goes back, and it's both parties. FDR did it, he targeted, used the IRS against enemies of the New Deal. John F. Kennedy did it. Of course, Nixon has a famous enemies list where he used IRS, tactics to go after people who were opponents of his administration. Apparently, Paula Jones and Jennifer Flowers were audited after they turned against Bill Clinton. I mean, there's so many ways, so many cases in history where the president has used the IRS or allegedly used the IRS against his enemies that, what about people like us? Who knows what they're doing to our, when they're auditing us? Is it some kind of a slight, do we look at them cross-eyed 1 year or something like that? So everybody can relate to that. And I think that's why there's a lot of bipartisan anger to this. Listening to the president, it sounded like he was just one of us. It says, I'm outraged and I can't take it anymore. Well, he's the president. It's one thing for Ann Fisher to be enraged, but for Barack Obama to be enraged, It sounds like he's powerless to change anything like this.
You're listening to All Sides with Dan Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. And if you don't recognize his voice, shame on you. It's Ken Rudin, NPR's political junkie. You want to talk about the week behind us and the week ahead? 614-292-8513 or email us at allsides@wosu.org. You can check out our Facebook page and you can tweet us at WOSU All Sides. So, I mean, yeah, ostensibly this feeds that ultra-right-wing conservative narrative about big government and big brother and all that kind of thing. But you're right, it's bipartisan.
Yeah, no. I mean, the right wing has complained about the IRS for a long time. But, you know, when Nixon was president and when Bush was president and allegations were used against civil, you know, that they were using the IRS against civil rights organizations or peace groups, then the left was, you know, saying about the big government and the IRS. So, that's the problem with the politics of it all is that every side, and we talk about all sides with Ann Fisher, but all sides seems to have gotten the brunt of IRS snooping around and or a special attention, shall we say, and whether it's gone up to the food chain in the Obama administration or not, these headlines are just not good news for somebody who's trying to fend off the right wing argument that we have an intrusive government.
Is it now? It's not necessarily absolutely clear that the conservative groups were unfairly targeted at the time. I mean, the IRS operates. It's so under. There's not a lot of people who work there actually, considering what they do, and they're saying flagging is just a way of doing their job.
Well, yeah. Well, look, they have to flag. There are a lot of groups that apply. You know, that apply for a tax exempt status. And they have to be scrutinized, and they have to be investigated. That's what the IRS does. But if we're going to make a special effort to go after groups that say Tea Party in their name or conservative, mm-hmm. which seems like what's happened, if they went out of their way to target conservative, right-wing, right-leaning groups, then that's playing politics. And that, you know, I mean, Obama is right in that sense that they have no business doing that. But, of course, we've seen in the past the IRS can be used in political witch hunts, and both sides have felt the brunt of it, as I said.
There'll be hearings.
There will be hearings, and of course, the Republicans love hearings, just like the Democrats loved hearings when Bush was president. but in fairness, and there should be hearings, and I suspect that the administration. Well, look, who knows? Remember, you know, we're talking about these low-level IRS people in Cincinnati. Who are doing all these things, and when these 7, 4, 5, or 6 guys broke into the Watergate office building, well, this was a third-rate burglary, mm-hmm. as Ron Ziegler, the White House press secretary, said at the time. I'm not necessarily comparing it. I'm just saying we don't know right now. But if there is an investigation, if there is some kind of a linkage with Obama administration, and it comes out in the hearings, then this is serious stuff. But on the other side, the Republicans have shown an ability to overplay their hand. And so while they're still talking all these months later about what Susan Rice said on the talk shows regarding Benghazi, mm-hmm. well, that's not the point anymore. And I think a lot of people say, well, if there are hearings, the Republican Party is overreaching. And they have to realize that mindset is getting more and more popular in the U.S., and they have to realize they need to pick and choose more carefully.
But what to pick from? Okay, so we got the IRS and then the other revelation this week that the Justice Department snooped into phone records of the Associated Press. We know this administration has taken a hard line against leaks, leaks of government secrets, but this has taken on the press as well now.
It has, and, you know, it's interesting how everybody thinks that, you know, Obama is beloved by the press. And of course, if you look at the campaign coverage, and certainly in 2008, you can make the case that the press was its loyal ally, both against Hillary Clinton and against John McCain. But at the same time, they have gone after more journalists than any other administration in history. They've put more journalists with subpoenas than any other administration in history. And what it really does, the real danger, is that any government official who's even thinking about talking to a journalist, well, you know, knowing that the White House is going to subpoena journalists' phone records, they'll think twice about cooperating, and that puts a terrible chill on the right of a free press.
Once again, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. My guest is Ken Rudin. If you want to check out our Facebook page, you can post your question or comment there. And the idea that this does take on the press means it certainly will get the headlines.
Well, but it should get the headlines, again, because, look, there are some leaks in the White House that are very disturbing to the White House. And this had to do with an al-Qaeda plot that was hatched in Yemen. And that's serious stuff. But if the administration is trying to tamper down reporting about al-Qaeda attack plots, because, remember, this came around the time of the first anniversary of the killing of Osama bin Laden. And the administration said, you know, we've made the world much safer. There have been fewer attacks. But if there are more attacks, or at least more attacks planned, well, we should know that. And for the administration to try to, you know, suppress a press, a news organizations from reporting that, you know, it shows that, you know, if you have bad news, you shouldn't be reporting it. Again, other administrations have done that in the past, but it's, I think the problem is that, first of all, pro-Obama folks hate when we, the journalists, compare anything their boss is doing to George Bush or Richard Nixon, and sometimes comparisons like that are an overreach. But sometimes they do things that remind one of the Bush mentality or the Nixon mentality, and just saying it's not true doesn't mean that it's not true.
Carl in Columbus, you're on the air with Ken Rudin. Welcome, Carl.
Good morning, Ann. And your guest, Ken, has an encyclopedic, almost instantaneous recall of politics, and I can't even talk as fast as he can remember.
Do I talk too fast? Yeah, I guess I
did talk. What I'm asking, and it should be a fairly brief question, is for you to use some of that encyclopedic knowledge to put some perspective on these issues. Two of the three problems that President Obama's experiencing currently. Of the three, I'm interested in your analysis and comparison on two of them. One is the phone mapping. This was not a phone tapping, listening on phone calls. It was a record of which number called which number, so that big software could map and say that the Associated Press talked to such and such a person,
okay,
and so forth. So,
we're running
please
out of time, Carl.
Compare and contrast that to the Bush administration, which did phone mapping, not tapping. Do you remember how many, Ken?
I don't, but I'm sure it's a lot.
150 million is what was reported. 150 million.
And if you Carl, you make a very good point. Comparing the two, the scope of what Obama has done and what Bush and Nixon did, that is not fair. It just reminds one of things like that. Now, we can say that are they tapping phones? Well, certainly they did not tap the reporters' phones of the Associated Press. But again, it puts a chill into the idea of a free press when reporters' sources are just, you know, they go through their phone logs to see who they spoke to. And for all we know, they could be coming up with other stuff, too, that would frighten other whistleblowers, shall we say, from talking to the media. But you're absolutely right. I mean, a fair comparison. It's not a fair comparison to put Obama and Bush and or Nixon in the same sentence. But again, these are tactics that do put a question about what the administration is doing and whether they should be doing it this way.
Thank you, Carl, for that call. Once again, 614-292-8513 is the number if you want to talk with Ken Rudin, NPR's political junkie. We're kind of rounding up the week in the Obama administration, and we will continue to when we return. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.
The Support comes from Ohio State's Ross Heart Hospital, helping to build healthy hearts with a 2013 wellness series. Heart disease is the leading cause of death in the United States, and regular physical activity is a great way to prevent it. Details about Ohio State's wellness series are at go.osu.edu/series.
The WOSU Public Media Member Card Benefit of the Month for May is the Gateway Film Center. Enjoy two-for-one admission all month long. Support 89.7 NPR News at the $85 level and receive your member card. Just visit WOSU.org. And thanks for your support of 89.7 NPR News.
Support for 89.7 comes from the State Auto Insurance Companies, providing home, automobile, and business insurance products and services to Central Ohioans since 1921. State Auto is on the web at stateauto.com.
Welcome back to All Sides with Ann Fisher. My guest this hour is NPR's political junkie, Ken Rudin. If you have a question or comment for him, there's lots to talk about. 614-292-8513. We have an email from Nancy. She says, as outrageous as all of this IRS business is, what is more outrageous is the, quote, firing of the director of the IRS. Big deal. The man is retiring anyway. How does this accomplish anything? This is one of the most scary things I have heard of a regime doing since Nixon. I am so disappointed. What about firing the top person right off the bat like that, Ken?
Well, I mean, you know, sometimes the White House realizes it's in trouble. The White House realizes that every headline in every newspaper in the country today shows the administration in a bad light. And the administration has been kind of on the defensive for weeks now. Well, you know, we can't make the Congress pass gun laws. Well, I can't stop Syria from butchering its own people. You know, I can't do anything. So it seems like they have to take these little steps at least to show that they're proactive. And, of course, firing the acting commissioner of the IRS, who nobody ever heard of, Stephen Miller, who nobody ever heard of until today or yesterday, is obviously a first step. And, of course, if there are more IRS people who will have to go. Look, you know, the frustration is we have to be fair here. And, of course, we have to be fair. And we have to know if the administration was blindsided by this like the rest of us were or they knew about this. And, of course, if they knew about this, it's the famous John Dean question. What did the president know and when did he know? No, actually, that was Howard Baker who said that during Watergate. What did he know and when did he know it? If he knew anything, then larger heads, higher heads, could be chopped off. But for right now, you have to take care of something, at least to show that the administration is paying attention, even if it is window dressing. And, you know, Stephen Miller is the guy at this point.
Tom in Clintonville, you're on the air. Welcome, Tom.
Yes, hi. I would like to point out that I am sick to death of these nonstop attacks on my president. These are manufactured crises. I mean, the idea that the president of the United States is responsible for every person in the world carrying an RPG in Libya who attacks Americans, the family members of the people killed in Benghazi asked not to politicize that. Nothing. You know, but they keep doing it. This thing on the IRS, there is no head of the IRS because the Republicans have blocked it. These are manufactured crises, and I think CNN, NPR, and even your guests contribute to the thing of, oh, Obama's weakened. He's in crisis. He's in that. This isn't a manufacturer of his making. This is nonstop obstructionism.
Okay, Ken Rudin?
Well, you know, that sounds very bizarre to me. I mean, and I'll tell you why. It's like saying, well, you know, George Bush didn't create Katrina. He had nothing to do with it. He had nothing to do with the getting the people, the evacuees out. But his handling of it was abysmal, and he paid for it in the polls. He didn't pay for it for re-election because he was already in his second term, but the Republicans certainly paid for it. I mean, the point is, you know, I agree with you completely about Benghazi. From the beginning, this became a Republican talking point. This became an issue for the let's see, and it still is a talking point because let's see if we can damage Obama in 2012. We couldn't, but maybe we could damage Hillary Clinton in 2016, and they have not stopped talking about that either. So that's clearly what they're doing with that. But, you know, to have the IRS playing politics, look, the fact that there was no head of the IRS doesn't mean there's no IRS running. If there's, you know, a lot of times there are cabinets that are missing a secretary, or there are sub-cabinets, agencies that don't have their top, but they still have people, hundreds if not thousands of people working on their behest. So there is, the government is still operating. And to say that we're all ganging up on the president, I mean, sometimes you need to take responsibility. Sometimes if the Internal Revenue Service, which is supposed to be an independent operating agency and a nonpartisan agency, is targeting conservatives, is targeting Tea Party, well, you don't have to be a right winger to be outraged, because the next time we could have a Republican president and the IRS is going after peace groups and progressive groups and civil rights organizations. And then we could say, well, it's not, you know, President Jeb Bush's fault. It's the IRS's fault. Sometimes the president has to take responsibility because it's his government. So I agree with you. I think Benghazi is a manufactured crisis to help make this a partisan issue. But, you know, going after journalists' phone logs to see who they're talking to, or having the IRS come down on conservative groups, to me, well, all I can say is it's more disturbing to me, and it should be disturbing to you, because the next day we could have a Republican president with a Republican administration, and the IRS is going after, to Tom. So, look, we know that from the beginning, Mitch McConnell said our goal is to make this guy a one-term president. We know that. But there are still things that should be disturbing enough for everybody, regardless of whether you're a D or an R, to be upset about this.
All right, Tom, thanks for your call. We appreciate it. You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. And you can talk with Ken Rudin, 614-292-8513. You can email us at allsides@wosu.org. And you can go onto our Facebook page and post your question or comment there. Leah in Columbus, you're on the air.
Hi there. Thanks for having me.
You're welcome.
I have a question about Eric Cantor and the House Republicans' decision to bring the ACA back to the floor for a vote for like the 30-somethingth time. Mr. Rudin, can you comment on the motivation behind that?
The Affordable Care Act.
Yes.
Well, this is another, I mean, sometimes if you look at what the House has accomplished this year, it's one of the lowest producing Congresses, at least in the last 10 years, and we can go back way beyond that too. This, according to some counts, this is the 37th time that the Republicans are bringing back repeal of the Obama health care bill to the floor. We know it can very easily pass the House. We know it has no chance in the world to pass in the Senate. And we know that even if it did, there would be an Obama veto. Well, but of course, it's a waste of time. The purpose of it is to make headlines. But then the Republicans will argue that this is really only the third or fourth time where we're bringing the ACA for a complete dismantlement, because in the past, we've only just tried to take out some parts of it. But the point is, whether it's the fourth time or the 37th time or the 400th time, we know what the result will be. And if it's just to say, look, you know, we promised, when you elected me, I promised to repeal Obamacare, so I'll be doing it constantly and constantly, while nothing else gets done, it's, you know, and I bet you if it weren't Eric Cantor or it weren't John Boehner, it would be the Tea Party. They would get rid of Cantor and Boehner and put up people who are even more to their liking, and then they would have probably a repeal vote every day. So, you know, we talked about earlier how sometimes whether crises are political in nature, as Benghazi seems to be, but this seems to be just totally political. And for what? It's just another day without anything else getting done.
But they say that next week, by the way, Leah, thanks for your call. We appreciate it. There's going to be a vote on Richard Cordray as the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau. He's now the acting head him the head. A vote. Well, sources confirm. So they're going to do something.
look, I've been a fan of, if you don't like something, you vote against it. If you like something, you vote for it. When Nixon was president and Harold Carswell and Clement Haynsworth, the two Supreme Court justices, they weren't filibustered. They were rejected. Nixon brought them up for a vote. The Democrats didn't filibuster it. Matter of fact, the Democrats had a majority in the Senate. but they took it up for a vote and they were defeated. And then Nixon had replacements and they were approved. Everything seems to be held up for votes. I mean, of course, before Richard Cordray, of course, was this woman named Elizabeth Warren.
Right.
And she said, okay, you know, I'm withdrawing my name for the, and I'll just beat Scott Brown in Massachusetts.
Right. I mean, just get elected
just
in the Senate.
Like it just seems like, I understand the power, the minority needs a voice in the Senate. I understand that completely. But to block everything and to find that 60 votes is needed to, you know, just to have the Pledge of Allegiance rather than with the majority, it used to be a majority, it just makes a mockery of the whole thing. And, of course, again, you know, you could turn my words earlier in the conversation saying, well, you know, when it becomes a Republican majority, won't Democrats do the same thing? Well, they probably will do the same thing. But just, let you know, if it seems like there's a majority ready for a vote in the Senate, let them vote. And if he's approved, he's approved. And if he's not approved, then, you know, let him be defeated. But just don't hold up all these nominations. But I'll tell you, though, they did this during Clinton. They did it much worse during Bush. And they're doing much worse during Obama. So it's just getting worse and worse.
Exactly. Eugene in Columbus, you're on the air. Welcome.
Welcome. Thank you so much. Thank you so much. And Ken Rudin, I appreciate your opinion on a lot of things. I listen to you quite a bit. So thank you so much. I just really wanted to hear a comment about, I believe with the leaks, the Associated Press, the phone mapping, it has something to do with trying to find out who leaked information relating to a CIA agent. I guess I'm trying to find out at what point is it okay for you know, as a result of free press, such information to be leaked for an agent or CIA information to be compromised. And if so, you know, is the information compromised as a result of that?
Well, that's not even the Obama argument, although that is the Obama administration's argument, but it's a fair argument. And we saw this argument during the Valerie Plame affair, where Vice President Cheney's chief of staff went to Robert Novak, the columnist, and said that, you know, that her husband, that Valerie Plame is a CIA agent, and it was actually made in, I don't know if it was made as a leak or made matter of fact, but of course when you do something like that, you put lives in jeopardy. And of course there is a former CIA agent who is now in prison who revealed the name of a CIA agent. And when you do that, I mean, look, obviously we can't say, well, certain leaks are okay and certain leaks are not okay. Obviously, we have to decide what's good or wrong in national security. The difference with the AP, I think, is that the AP could have been warned in advance. They could have talked to the AP in advance, but instead they went to court immediately. With the Valerie Plame thing, it seemed like just a genuine leak to hurt somebody. With the idea, because her husband was a critic of the Bush administration, so therefore let's hurt him by outing his wife, and that is, maybe if it's petty politics, but it's also, it gets to the point where we could be endangering people's lives. Now, if the Obama administration argues that the leaks that came out about the al-Qaeda threat was endangering the operations, you know, that's the one thing. I haven't heard that. All I did hear was that they're just going through every phone call, you know, every phone log of the AP, and it just seems like, like on paper, it could be for a noble cause, but ostensibly you could use that information for anything. And again, as I said earlier, if it's trying to intimidate, look, the Obama administration hates leaks. Every administration hates leaks, but they seem to be more aggressive about this than ever before, than any other administration. And if they're going after, if they're just trying to send a signal saying, look, you know, don't cooperate with the press because we'll find out about it, that is kind of creepy. But at the same time, you know, Eugene, as you say, if you're revealing the name of a covert agent, you're threatening not only the operation, but you're threatening his or her safety. And that is just, you know, that is beyond the pale.
All right, Eugene, thanks for that call. We appreciate it. Michael in Delaware, you're on the air with Ken Rudin. Welcome, Michael.
Hey, thanks for taking my call. Got a question. We're talking about all these partisan type things here and people's views that perhaps Republicans are trying to slow down the president's agenda now and stuff. But one of the things I wanted to get you guys' take on is, I happen to be a Democrat, full disclosure, but I live in an extremely Republican area.
Yes, you do.
And and I'm a small business owner, which also makes most of my friends go crazy. Can't believe I'm a Democrat. But I'm seeing things now from the Republican side that concern me a little bit. I wanted to get you guys' take on this. I have neighbors now who are older than me in their 50s and 60s who are buying quite a bit of guns. They've never owned guns before. I find that odd. They won't want to talk about anything when it comes to global warming. The Republicans seem to have this amazing ability right now. It's very much a team thing. And our team says guns are good. Our team says global warming's pretend. Our team, I don't feel that from my liberal friends. My friends who are Democrats tend to be Democrats for a lot of different reasons. So I don't see that. I don't know the word I'm looking for. We're not solidified the same way. But their team seems to be very on point with those things, and it seems very unnatural. You know, I have kids. I worry about global warming someday. I worry about the environment. But right now they're bringing things up. They want the South. There's three or four states trying to get the EPA pushed back on things they're trying to do. And it's a very partisan type politics.
So you're saying
that
they're...
I wanted your take on why the Republicans are so... It's almost like they're an angry group all backed into one corner. And
well,
I mean... Go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, I just you're talking about their message, and they're able to get a solid message out.
They are able to get a message, and they're somehow to get people. They somehow, and this is the part that scares me. And I'm careful. I don't want to bring up the names you hear on the radio every day and the television channel that backs that. But they seem to be doing things that are not natural. I guess I'm saying, if you've never owned a gun in your life, and I haven't seen any reason to run out and buy one now, other than the NRA's kind of a fervor crazy right now terror of he's trying to take our guns. So I'm seeing people who have never had interest in guns buying guns.
Hmm.
Or it's very logical that global warming is real.
Okay.
It doesn't have to keep you up all night, but they're on that message. And that's my point. How do they – and that brings me back to almost like a team-type environment.
Let's hear what Ken Rudin has to say. Ken?
Well, Michael raises very good points. And it's two-pronged, I think. First of all, we do know that conservative talk radio is very, very popular around the country. The Rush Limbaughs, the Sean Hannitys, you know, the people from Fox who have their own shows, the Glenn Becks. But if you combine the popularity of conservative talk radio and Fox News, which is the most powerful and popular by far of the cable shows, and you combine that with a president who is a Democratic president, shall we say, who they feel is espousing a liberal agenda. Well, the stars have lined up perfectly for that conservative message. Of course you have to buy guns because the government is going to come and confiscate your guns. Of course the global warming is a myth because you know, there's only 77 scientists who said that it's going to happen. So if Bush were president, I would suspect that you wouldn't see this kind of success on the right. I suspect that if, for example, John McCain or Mitt Romney had won, you'd see MSNBC doing better in the numbers. I think you'd see left of center groups doing better in the numbers with the numbers. But now, like for example, I mean, just turn it around a little bit. If George Bush were president and these drones were hitting people, you know, indiscriminately, well, not indiscriminately, but the drone program was being used in Pakistan and Yemen and Afghanistan, things like that, wouldn't the left be marching in the street? Wouldn't we hear more outrage from Democratic lawmakers? Of course we would. But the fact is that I think so at the same time, while the progressive wing seems to be silenced a little bit because Obama's in the White House, the conservatives on the right wing are saying, "Oh, look, this guy is socialism. It's taking over. The government is intruding in our affairs." And I think there's a lot of and when you combine that with the internet, where there is no fact checking on the internet, you know, if they say that the government is taking our guns, well, I better buy a gun because I read it on the internet. So I think again, the fact is, with an Obama presidency and the ascendancy of conservative talk media. And the unproofing of the internet, you have everything lined up to the right. But again, as I said, when the Republicans win the White House, if they ever do again, if they ever learn how to win the White House again, and you might see policies changing, then you might see the progressives speaking out more. But right now, it seems to be while the White House is under Democratic control, it seems like the voices out there on talk radio is the opposite.
Michael. from Delaware, thank you very much for your call. My guest is Ken Rudin, NPR's political junkie. We have him for another segment if you want to get a call in, 614-292-8513. Go to our Facebook page and post your question or comment there. That's very easy for a lot of people to do. And we'll continue our conversation when we return. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.
Support comes from the Physicians Free Clinic and Voluntary Care Network, providing charity medical care for Central Ohio's uninsured patients. More about joining the Columbus Medical Association Foundation in supporting the clinic is at goodhealthcolumbus.org.
You can support 89.7 NPR News for as little as $5 a month. As a basic member, you'll receive some great benefits, including a one-year subscription to our program guide, Airfare Magazine, either by mail or email, the WOSU FYI e-newsletter, and a WOSU Public Media reusable grocery tote. A basic membership starts at just $60. Visit us at WOSU.org to become a member of 89.7 NPR News today.
Program support is provided by the Arts and College Prep Academy. ACPA is now enrolling high school students looking for a safe and vigorous learning environment for all. More information about ACPA can be found online at artcollegeprep.org.
Columbus on the Record brings you in-depth, thoughtful, and balanced analysis of the issues impacting life in Central Ohio. Be sure to watch WOSU News Director Mike Thompson and his panel talk about the top local and national stories of the week. Watch Columbus on the Record Friday nights at 8:30 on WOSU TV.
Welcome back to All Sides with Ann Fisher. My guest this hour, Ken Rudin, NPR's political junkie. Question or comments, 614-292-8513. And John in Marysville, you're on the air. Welcome to the show. You disagree with some of the things Ken said earlier about the filibusters.
Well, yes, Ken, in all due respect, you made a statement that the filibuster threat had increased under Clinton, increased under Bush, and it's still getting worse under Obama. That's to me, that's not a correct statement. The filibuster threat remained pretty level through the Clinton and Bush administrations, but has skyrocketed under Barack Obama. So I just want to be careful that we're talking about a unique situation here of obstructionism just for the sake of obstructionism.
Ken?
Well, I was just thinking of an example. First of all, I'm thinking of the judges that were there. Were some judges that were held up during the Clinton administration.
The federal
judges
in Ohio was one of many states.
Right, and the Democrats went after Bush more than they did. Look, I'm not saying it's a steady jump. I'm not saying it's an equal jump. And I have to be clear that I'm not saying that it's just a continuing trend, but some of the language that the Republicans are using for holding up information that the cabinet officials didn't answer questions adequately, that's exactly what the Democrats were doing when they were holding up Bush administration Bush administration officials, like judges, like cabinet officials. So yes, no, it has skyrocketed. It's out of control, and I think it's petty and it's politics. But if you go back during the 8 years of George W. Bush, you'll find Democrats saying that I'm just holding it up. We're just going to hold up the nomination. We're just not going to deal with it at all. We saw that with the UN ambassador. We saw that with judgeships. We saw that with cabinet officials. But but now it's the way. Now, I mean, it's taken over a whole new ground under the Obama administration. I agree. So, in other words, I've never said that it's the same kind of inclination. Like, okay, it got more worse than Clinton, it got worse with Bush, and it got worse with Obama. It's obviously much worse than it's ever been, and it's because I mean, I'm not making excuses for it, but I'm just saying that it did happen under the Bush administration, and there are a lot of Republicans say, oh, you want to play games? We'll play games with you. It goes back to everything. Is it, did it start with when the Republicans went after Jim Wright? Did it go after when the Democrats went after Robert Bork? I mean, everybody, everything is a tit for tat, and every next time it happens, every next administration it happens, it is several times worse, and this is beyond. I mean, I can't imagine what the next administration is going to look like.
Ann and Columbia.
No, John makes a good point. I mean, I'm not saying it's just a continuing inclination. This is really out of control. But again, it's been happening. It's been getting worse and worse. And this administration is by far the worst. But it has been getting worse. Okay.
Now I've lost my train of thought.
I'm sorry.
It's okay. Ann and Columbus, you're on the air with Ken Rudin. Hi, Ann.
Hi. Hey, my question for Ken is, how much did the Citizens United ruling play into this whole IRS thing? Because it's my understanding that Congress didn't do their job in enacting clear-cut rules for the IRS to follow following that ruling, and that suddenly they had a flood of applications, and a lot of them turned out a lot of them looked like Karl Rove money laundering schemes. So that was my question. How much did that ruling play into what is happening in the IRS right now?
Well, that is a good question. That's a fair question, because I do know that the IRS has not really gone after some of these big, big conservative groups who are raising a ton of money, or any groups that are raising a ton of money. They went after these new groups that sprouted up, and try to get this tax-exempt status. But I don't know. I mean, it's very possible that a lot of these groups did come to fruition because Citizens United allowed them to. But the point is, the documentation shows that they went after groups with the words Tea Party and conservative in their name. Mm-hmm. And does that mean that a lot of these groups are bogus groups? They may be. Many of these groups may be bogus groups. Many of them may have come to be because Citizens United allowed them to do it. So I think your question is fair. I don't know the answer to it, but I just do know that if the qualification for dismissal, for denying tax-exempt status, is because it says conservative or Tea Party, and that gets me a little nervous. But it's very possible, and I think you may be right, that a lot of these groups came to being because the Supreme Court decision allowed it to raise all this money.
I guess that's what I was kind of getting at earlier, Ken, when I brought up the fact that the IRS is so shorthanded, and the point has been made that there was this flurry, thousands of requests, and one of the excuses or explanations has been they were flagging just to be more, you know, just to save time. So, Ann, thanks for that call. Let's see, Ron. Ron in Columbus, you're on the air with Ken Rudin. Hi, Ron.
Hi, yeah. I also have a question about the IRS thing. I understand, if I remember and understand correctly, that tax-exempt organizations are pretty limited in what they can do as far as politics or, political activity. And also the fact that, you know, these conservatives and these T groups, you know, their premises, they don't want to pay taxes, I'm surprised that everybody is so shocked by this. I mean, I would think that they would have to undergo a little bit more scrutiny just because of their political affiliations. And again, I don't really know, I don't remember how much they can be involved with politics and things like that. But also just their anti-tax, I would think that would bear more scrutiny, that would put more scrutiny on them. And I'm curious as to why everybody is so shocked by this.
Well, I think if the policy was that we're going to spend extra scrutiny on the word conservative or Tea Party, which it seems like what's happened, I mean, at least that's the understanding that I have, that's just something that just, you know, IRS is supposed to do nothing to do with politics. And if I were a conservative or a Republican or a Tea Party person, I saw that the IRS was singling out Tea Party people or conservatives, that would get me to be outraged. I mean,
I agree with you. I think everybody, and of course it is short-staffed and they can't go after everybody, but just to, but I mean, are there no progressive groups that are trying to become tax exempt? Are there no progressive groups forming to try to stop, try to counterbalance the right wing and the Karl Roves of the world? I'm sure there are, but according to what I've seen now, there's no looking at their groups, what they're trying to do and what they're trying to accomplish. So, I think there are a lot of groups out there trying to skirt the law and try to pretend they're tax exempt and nonprofit when they're not. And I think the IRS may be overmatched when it comes to dealing with that. But again, I think the outrage is more about the fact that that at least this is a smoking gun. When you see the words, you see Tea Party, give them special scrutiny. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think that's the only thing that gets outraged about it. But it is kind of missing the big point, which, Ron, I think you're right about that. And the big point is that with all this influx of money, with all this ability of money, there are more and more groups trying to pretend they're tax-exempt and nonprofit. And how do you deal with it? But again, if you just look at conservatives, I think there will be an outrage, a backlash to it, and that's what's happened.
Thank you, Ron. Joe in Columbus, you're on the air. Welcome, Joe.
Morning, sir. U.S. ambassadors usually don't go gallivanting around places without orders. Who ordered our ambassador to Benghazi, and how many stars are going up on the wall in Langley?
Wait, I'm sorry.
Who ordered our ambassador to Benghazi?
Who ordered him to do what?
To go to Benghazi.
Well, Chris Stevens has been an advocate, has been involved in Libya for years. I mean, he's obviously a career
yeah.
official who really believed in, I think he had great contacts with the non-Gaddafi forces in Libya. And, I mean, he was a beloved guy there. I mean, in wartime, we still have, envoys around the world in very dangerous places. We have them in Afghanistan. We have them in Pakistan. We had one in the compound in Benghazi. I don't think anybody's putting stars on the wall when the loss of American life. And it doesn't sound like, I think with this whole hubbub about Benghazi, is not that why didn't we save Chris Stevens and the three other Americans? It's the whole hubbub is like, why did they try to play politics with it, according to the Republicans, that the administration tried to play politics with it? But I don't think there's any question that nobody wanted, nobody wanted any harm to come of the compound. And, of course, it was overrun, and they didn't expect it to be overrun. And they couldn't have, and all this thing that why couldn't we send in the Marines to stop it? But by the time we realized what was happening, according to State Department, it was too late.
Could you explain the stars on the wall reference, Ken?
I didn't know what that meant.
You don't know?
No, I didn't know what Joe meant when he said that.
Okay. All right. Well, Joe, thanks a lot for your call. We appreciate it. Harold in Columbus, you're on the air. Welcome, Harold.
Hi, Ann. Kind of been waiting for a show like this. I'm kind of glad that you're having it.
Thanks.
I'm curious about why the press is leaping to the defense of a conservative movement that has for years basically smeared the press in every opportunity that they get, and at the same time has done the same thing basically with this president, everything from his citizenship and origin of birth to his policies, including health care and everything else, for years. And nobody seemed to be too concerned terribly about that. And now all of a sudden everybody's jumping on this bandwagon because it involves the IRS. And I'm not sure that that's the press's job. And so I'd like to hear some comment on that.
All right. Ken.
Harold, I need you to be a little more specific. It's not the press's role to criticize the involvement of the IRS into partisan politics when the IRS is supposed to be nonpartisan, if that indeed is what happened. I mean, I understand.
I'm sorry. Go ahead, Carol.
From a macro standpoint, you might have a point. But however, when you look at the macro of this, it looks to me like they're getting a little bit of their comeuppance and they're actually stepping in quicksand with this whole thing, because now it's going to reveal what they've been doing all these years when they have these hearings.
Well,
Yeah, I'm not sure if you're talking about the press now or the Obama administration. We're going to reveal what who's doing.
Well, if you look at what these hearings are going to reveal, they're going to reveal.
Are we talking about the IRS, or are we talking about the Justice Department and the Associated Press reporters? What are we talking about?
I'm talking about the entire thing.
Well, these are two different matters.
Yeah, the IRS and the AP stuff is different.
Well, it is to some degree, but the larger part of this ties into a narrative that is consistently conservative in its outcomes.
If I understand what you're meaning, I think what you said is that here we have conservatives suddenly all worried about the freedom of the press when of course, under the Bush administration or the Nixon administration, the press freedoms were the last thing they cared about. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. Harold, is that what you mean?
Precisely.
Okay. All right.
Okay. Well, no. I mean, we see Republicans talking about how all the bad thing about Obama health care is that it's going to cut all this money from seniors. When we saw Republican budgets for years calling for the same exact thing. I mean, Paul Ryan's plan would cut billions of dollars from seniors. But when they were campaigning against Obama, they said, well, look, of course, that's what Republicans will do, and that's what Democrats will do. But I think the average person should be upset about press abuses under a Democratic or Republican administration. I think the public and the press should be upset about nonpartisan government agencies playing politics under Democrat or Republican. Of course the conservatives are going to have a field day with this because it's Obama, and if Obama could be embarrassed, let's embarrass him. But at the same time, the press, as far as I know, they ridiculed Bush and dismissed Bush and went after Bush on the weapons of mass destruction, on the food prices, on incursion into Iraq, into Katrina. I mean, so it just so happens that by going after Obama, it's helping conservatives, but the press has got to do its job. And look,
press can't pick and choose.
No, but then you could say the case. And where was the press when Colin Powell stood up at the UN and said there were weapons of mass destruction? And my answer to that is the press failed its job, didn't do its job. So the press is not infallible, right. And of course there are a lot of things that we should have done better and we still should do better, but. But just to say that we messed up there doesn't mean we should continue to mess up.
Right. Ken Rudin, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you, Anne. It was a lot of fun. Sometimes.
Ken Rudin, NPR's political junkie. Thanks for listening. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.